All right, we are going to continue this evening our Sunday evening studies in the qualifications of those that would serve as elders in the Lord's Church. Last Lord's Day morning, we finished talking about the work of elders, and so this morning we gave you a little break as far as the Sunday morning lessons go, and I meant to make mention of that this morning and failed to, but we want to stay on our course as far as the qualifications are concerned. We won't finish them tonight. There's one, maybe two more lessons to go in that respect. We shall see how that plays out. Anyway, we are continuing this study and looking at these qualifications roughly in the order that they are found, with some minor exceptions here and there. Some of these are very closely related one to another. And it gets a little confusing when one translation will use a word for a particular Greek word, and yet that same English word that they are putting for that Greek word is one that another translation will use for a different Greek word, another one of the qualifications. And because they're closely related, and so the same word may show up in the different list, but in reality, different Greek words, and so that becomes a little confusing at times. But we've looked at several. We looked at nine of these qualifications already. And we want to begin our look tonight at the qualification that he must be apt to teach. And it is found in chapter 3 of 1 Timothy and in verse 2. Both the King James and the American Standard Version has simply apt to teach. The New American Standard Version, able to teach. New English Bible, a good teacher. The Lexham English Bible, skillful in teaching. And I like that. Thayer says it means simply apt and skillful in teaching. And so the expression means that it means a person who is capable and able as a teacher, one who is qualified by reason of knowledge and skills to be able to teach someone else. Elders must have the ability to teach. They need to be able to have an accurate and a comprehensive knowledge of the Bible in general so that they can be able to teach it to others, whether that be publicly or privately, according to their differing abilities and the talents that they've been blessed with. Some, in fact, have a lot of talent with regards to teaching and imparting the truth to others in private or more informal situations, whereas others are skilled in addressing larger groups, such as assemblies of the church, such as this. But the text does not require that an elder be a skilled public teacher. It doesn't say that. It says that he's to be apt to teach. And that may be in a public fashion, but it may not be. And we, again, need to be careful that we not require more of the man that would serve in this capacity than the text actually is requiring. But this qualification to be apt to teach, it doesn't require that he be a skilled public speaker, that he be a skilled scholarly preacher. Doesn't require that he be the one that does the majority of the public teaching in the local congregation in the discharge of his duties. That's not what's being required. Let's do add another passage to this. Over in Titus chapter 1, as we look at the things said there with regards to these qualifications, Titus chapter 1 verses 9 through 11, I want us to notice. He says, holding to the faithful word, which is according to the teaching, that he may be able to exhort in the sound doctrine and to convict the gainsayers. For there are many unruly men, vain talkers and deceivers, especially they of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped. Men who overthrow whole houses, teaching things which they ought not for filthy lucre's sake. And so an elder needs to be to be clinging to the word, holding it fast, firmly enough that he's able to do two things. For one, that he's able to exhort and encourage brethren in the faithful word, to be able to encourage them and exhort them to do the things that are found in God's word. But also, they have to be able to refute and convict those who oppose the truth, who oppose the faithful word. Those who may, as we've alluded to already, they may They may be someone that's teaching in a class. They may be here and present a sermon that includes error, that are teaching something that's not right in the sight of God. And an elder needs to be knowledgeable enough of God's will to be able to spot that, skillful enough in being able to teach, to be able to convict the gainsayer, to be able to convict them, making a charge that they're teaching error, and be able to convict them, to be able to prove that they're wrong in what they're teaching from the Word of God. And so he has to be apt to teach. That's an ability that is necessary for him to be able to fulfill this responsibility of teaching and exhorting and stopping the mouths of those who are teaching error. So for a brother to be qualified to serve in the capacity of an elder, he's got to be one who's apt to teach. He's got to have the knowledge of the truth and the ability to impart that knowledge to others. And he's got to have that ability and be willing to use that ability in the Lord's service. Now, one of the points that we've been making all along is that with very few exceptions in these qualifications, they're all required of all of us who are Christians. And certainly this is one of them. We're all required to be apt to teach. Notice over in Hebrews, the 5th chapter, verses 12 through 14, as the writer of the book of Hebrews is writing to them, these Jewish Christians, and encouraging them to maintain their faith, he says in chapter 5 of Hebrews and verses 12 through 14, he says, "For when by reason of the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need again that someone teach you the rudiments of the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of solid food." They've not grown like they should have. They should have grown by this point in time to be teachers of the Word, and not just students of the milk of the Word, but able to partake of the meat of the Word. Because, well, in fact, verse 14, "But solid food is for full-grown use, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern good and evil." That's to be true of all of us. We're to have, by reason of time, we're to use our abilities with the Scripture and grow on those abilities to where we can, be exercised to discern good and evil. That's true of all of us, and not just those that would serve as elders. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15. Peter said in that passage, 1 Peter 3 and verse 15, he says, "But sanctify in your hearts Christ as Lord, being ready always to give answer to every man that asketh you a reason concerning the hope that is in you, yet with meekness and fear." We're to always be ready to give an answer. Not just those that would serve as elders, but we're all to be apt to teach in that respect. And so, indeed, this is one of those qualifications that really, in essence, can be said to be required of all of us. But we can certainly see that the responsibility of elders in teaching the truth and admonishing us to obey the truth and convicting those who would teach something that is not according to truth requires that he be skilled in teaching. But the next qualification we want to notice is that he's not to be given to wine. And it's rendered differently in the different translations. The King James has "not given to wine." The American Standard that I use says "no brawler." But in the margin it says, gives an alternate, "not quarrelsome over wine." The New American Standard says "not addicted to wine." New English Bible must not be given to drink. The Revised Standard, "no drunkard." The English Standard Version, "not a drunkard." And so he's making reference here to drinking of alcoholic beverages. The Greek phrase that is used here, vine, says that it means literally tarrying at wine, given to wine, probably has a secondary sense of the effects of wine bibbing, that is, abusive brawling. Thayer, in his Greek English lexicon, says much the same. One who sits long at his wine, given to wine, drunken, give it the secondary sense, quarrelsome over wine, hence brawling, abusive. And so the generally accepted feelings about this word is that it has one of these two meanings, either tearing at or given to wine, or one who is a brawler, one who is abusive. And there's been a lot of controversy as to how to interpret that, which of those interpretations to give it. But it seems clear to me, in my mind, it seems to include more than just simply not under the influence of alcohol. Seems to be talking about more than just that, because we've already seen that elders are to be sober, which in among other things includes the concept of not being under the influence of intoxicants. And so it would seem that this would require that it is talking about something maybe a little bit more than that. So it seems to me that this qualifications is something of a combination of those two ideas. In other words, for a brother to qualify as an elder, he must not be a drinker, or be he one who acts like a drinker, and thus is quarrelsome and a brawler. Someone who's quick to fight as a drunkard would by nature be given to do. A brother who is by nature quarrelsome, contentious, abusive, like a drunk person, is not the kind of person that can serve as an elder in the Lord's church. So again, this to me is requiring that a brother not be a drinker or one who is a brawler like a drinker. Now, when we talk about deacons and talk about the qualifications for those that might serve in a congregation as deacons, we'll talk then about the differences that are found for them and those that are found here for elders. But again, this is required of all Christians. Not anything different from what is required of all of us in this respect. Over in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verses 4 through 8. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verses 4 through 8. Paul said, "But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. For ye are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. So then let us not sleep as do the rest, but let us watch and be sober. For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that are drunken are drunken in the night. But let us, since we are of the day, be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet, the hope of salvation." We're to be sober. And I think that would include being free from the influence of intoxicants. But I think he would also, in these, a lot of the places where the idea of soberness is talked about, it's the idea of sober-mindedness. And isn't that really what he's talking about here? He's not to be a drinker or someone who acts like a drinker. He's to be someone who exemplifies sober-mindedness. And that's exactly what we're encouraged to do in this passage of 1 Thessalonians. 2 Timothy 4 and in verse 5, he said, "But be thou sober in all things." 1 Peter 1 verse 13, "Be sober and set your hope perfectly on the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." In 1 Peter chapter 4, Peter condemns drinking on behalf of Christians. He says, "For the time past may suffice to have wrought the desire of the Gentiles, and to have walked in lasciviousness, lusts, wine bibbings, revelings, carousings, and abominable idolatries." Those three terms, wine bibbings, revelings, and carousings, they cover the down and out gutter drunk, down to the person who takes a social drink once in a while. It covers all levels of drinking in those terms that are found there. And we're not to be guilty of that. None of us are. And so, again, these things can be said of all of us, and not just of those that we might contemplate to appoint to this special work of overseeing in the local church. But let's go on. In the qualifications, we have next that he must not be a striker. Not be a striker. And that's not a reference to unions and walking out on strike against your employer. Not that at all. The King James and the American Standard Version say no striker. We also see here that it can have reference to a brawler. The Revised Standard, not violent. Pugnacious, the New American Standard Version says. Or he must not be a violent person, the Lexham English Bible says. So, and there are other renderings as well. Some would render it not a fist fighter, not given to blows, I saw, not ready to wound. And all of those different translations, we look at them because that can by itself help us to understand the term and what it's talking about and what is being required of the man that would serve as an elder. Thayer says that the Greek word means literally bruiser, ready with a blow, a pugnacious, contentious, quarrelsome person. And so the idea behind this qualification is that the brother must not be quick-tempered, it would seem. He must exercise self-control in times of trouble that may arise. He's got to learn how to be patient and kind and show that he has already learned that. Even with those that might insult him personally or might render attacks against him personally, he must not be someone who would have a tendency to fight back, whether we're talking in a physical way or verbally. So it would exclude a quick-tempered man, I think, one who's ready to fight at a moment's notice. He's got to be peaceable and be able to govern his temper. Well, surely we would understand that those same qualities should be found in those who are Christians. All of us should be one to be said not to be a striker, not to be a brawler, or these other terms that we saw used here. None of us should be quick-tempered in that way. So, but that's one of the things required of a man to serve as an elder. But something else. An elder must not be greedy of filthy lucre. And that's the way the King James Version renders it. The American Standard says no lover of money. The New American Standard, free from the love of money. And there are other renderings that are just slight rewordings of those phrases. And the Greek word thayer says eager for base gain. Greedy for filthy lucre. Vine denotes greedy of base gains. Literally, the Greek says not greedy for base gain. Not greedy for base gain. And so it has reference to, loving money, but an attitude of heart that's willing to pursue after money, even with the use of base methods to acquire it. We'll add another verse in here over in 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5 and in verse 2, where again he is talking about those that would serve as elders. 1 Peter 5 and verse 2, he says, tend the flock of God which is among you, exercising the oversight, not of constraint, but willingly, according to the will of God, nor yet for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind. All right, so again, the concept of filthy lucre is addressed here or mentioned. And he's not to be serving as an elder for filthy lucre's sake, but of a ready mind. He's to do so willingly, not because of some compensation that was offered to him or something of that nature. In fact, we do need to understand that elders can be compensated. I believe that that's exactly what Paul shows to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse 17, that an elder can be compensated for the work that he does in the local congregation. In fact, over in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 17, he says, let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and in teaching. For the scripture saith, thou shalt not muzzle the ox when he treadeth out the corn, and the laborer is worthy of his hire. An elder who is devoting his life to the work of shepherding the flock, I think he's worthy of compensation. That doesn't mean every congregation must be paying those that are serving as elders. And it may be most congregations would not feel that that's necessary. Most elders may not feel that it's necessary that they be compensated for their work. But I do know of congregations who many, many, many years ago undertook the work of preparing young men to preach. And some of the things that the elders of that congregation were doing, this is in Danville, Kentucky. They would work full time in teaching these young men that would come in on their own dime and make their own arrangements for living, but he would teach them, prepare them to preach the gospel. He was doing that full time, day in, day out, preparing these men to preach the gospel. I think that's a worthy thing that he was doing in that congregation, that they as a congregation were doing in preparing men to preach. And certainly if you're going to devote your time, your full time, to something in the cause of Christ like that, some help may be needed. And that was the case. And I would have no problem with an elder being compensated for his time and efforts and those kind of things. And so certainly an elder can be compensated. However, an elder must not just simply be pursuing compensation that might be offered to serve as an elder, because covetousness is itself condemned. And in fact, those who are guilty of covetousness are to be withdrawn from. Back in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, you recall when Paul was talking about that man who had his father's wife and the need to withdraw their fellowship from that man. In 1 Corinthians 5, down in verse 11, beginning of verse 9, he says, I wrote unto you in my epistle to have no company with fornicators, not at all meaning with the fornicators of this world, or with the covetous and extortioners, or the idolaters, for then must ye needs go out of the world. But as it is, I wrote unto you not to keep company, if any man that is named a brother be a fornicator or covetous, or an idolater, or a reviler, or a drunkard, or an extortioner, with such a one know not to eat. They were to withdraw their fellowship from a brother who was covetous. And that would include an elder as well. So he certainly can be compensated, but no man should be pursuing the office of an elder because he sees something that he can get out of it, whether it be a compensation or some other reward that he feels that it can provide for him. He must not think more of his money and in getting more than he does the work that the Lord has given for him to do. It carries both the idea of the love of money and the idea of using base gain, again, evil methods in order to acquire it. And so if a brother has an excessive desire for wealth or uses ungodly methods to obtain it, or unjustly obtaining wealth by or at the expense of others, then that is a man who could not scripturally be appointed to serve as an elder in the local church. Again, we could make these same comments and same points about those of us who are Christians, any of us who are Christians, that neither are we to be greedy of filthy lucre, no more than a man that would serve as an elder. And in fact, in these passages that I have listed here, he mentions the idea of covetousness and condemns covetousness time and again on the part of God's children. But let's go on. Let's consider that he must also be patient. And it is rendered patient in the King James Version. The American Standard and Revised Standard Versions says simply gentle. Or a forbearing disposition. The New English Bible gives us that translation. Thayer says seemly, suitable, equitable, fair, mild, gentle. And so the man who would be an elder must be one who's not easily provoked or revengeful. He's going to be someone who's going to be patient in all circumstances, even when as we have already alluded to in our previous lessons, attacks that may be made against him because of the work he's doing, he still is going to have patience to work with others. He's got to have patience and gentleness as he seeks to lead the flock, just like a shepherd would. You know, a shepherd isn't going to get very far if he's, you know, beating the animals to try to go where he wants them to go. They're going to want to run from him. He has to be patient and gentle as he leads them, prods them along gently to where they need to go. And elders and congregations are going to have the same disposition of gentleness and patience to lead the brethren in the congregation where they need to go. And you know, it may be necessary at times for elders to change the way things have always been done a certain way. And they, in their wisdom, may decide, you know, we need to change something. It may have to do with the way in which we do our Bible classes. It may have to do with the arrangement of our worship assemblies. The time of it could have any number of things that it could have to do with that they may decide needs to be changed. And it may, again, be a drastic change to those who have always been members there. They have to understand that. And they have to be patient, gentle, in the way in which they lead us into those kind of changes that may be beneficial indeed for the work of the congregation that they are overseeing. Every Christian, of course, is to be characterized as being patient. 2 Peter chapter 1 and in verse 6. Well, in fact, you remember in 2 Peter chapter 1, Paul is giving us the list of those things that we are to add to our faith. In verse 5, yea, and for this very cause, adding on your part all diligence, in your faith supply virtue, and in your virtue knowledge, and in your knowledge self-control, and in your self-control patience, and in your patience, godliness. And it goes on. And so patience is one of those things that we're to add. As our faith grows and builds, it is to be added. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 5. The American Standard says, "Let your forbearance be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand." Let your forbearance be known. Another way of saying, let your patience be known. And those men that we might consider, in this congregation, if they should be qualified to serve as elders, they should already be showing us their forbearance, the patience that they have in the conduct of themselves and the work that they already are doing in the work of the Lord. And so, indeed, they need to be men who show themselves to be patient. But something else, they are not to be a brawler. And we saw the word brawler used for one of the earlier ones. And so, again, these translations sometimes will, use the same English word to translate different Greek words, and we're at a different word here. But the King James translates it here simply, not a brawler. The American Standard says, not contentious. The Revised Standard, not quarrelsome. The New English Bible, avoiding quarrels, or uncontentious. And so these different ideas. Gene Thayer made the comment, inherent within the word is the idea of abstaining from battle, both physical and verbal. So it's similar in nature, certainly, to what we saw earlier. But he's going to be someone who steers clear of battles that may arise. And so this is a person who's not by nature an argumentative person. He's not someone who is just naturally going to try to argue with you on every little thing. He's going to be someone who has mastery of himself in so many ways, this being one of them. Now, that doesn't mean that as an elder or that as a Christian that he's not willing to contend when necessary. It doesn't mean that he's not going to stand up and be contentious if someone is attacking the truth, if someone is seeking to promote something that's in error. That's, again, when he must be willing to stand up and be contentious stand up for the truth. But he's going to be conciliatory. He's going to be averse to strife, but not so much as to be willing to compromise truth to avoid a fight. Again, he's going to be willing to fight if that be the case, but he's not going to be a belligerent controversialist, as they use the words that someone used. In Ephesians chapter 4, and in the first three verses, Philippians 4, and in verses 1 through 3, Paul said, "I therefore, the prisoner in the Lord, beseech you to walk worthily of the calling wherewith you were called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing one another in love, giving diligence to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace." So much there that's connected here to this idea of not being a brawler. He's promoting unity. He's striving to keep unity. He's striving to promote and keep the unity the peace that should be there. And thus he's going to be forbearing one another in love and all these other things that he said there. Again, every Christian should be characterized like that. Titus 3 and in verse 2. In Titus 3 and in verse 2, Paul said to Titus, let me get the previous verse there. Titus 3, and we'll begin at verse 1. Titus 3 and verses 1 and 2. He says, "Put them in mind to be in subjection to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready unto every good work, to speak evil of no man, not to be contentious, to be gentle, showing all meekness toward all men." That's what Paul was telling Titus to be teaching to the brethren. None of us are to be brawlers. None of us are to be contentious all the time. We need to be careful that we not allow ourselves to enter into that frame of mind where we'll be contentious and quarrelsome and argumentative over every little thing. That should not be what we do. One other thing we'll look at in our time this evening, and that is something we touched on earlier a little bit, and that's the idea of being covetous. In fact, the King James says not covetous. The American Standard says no lover of money. And Thayer says not loving money, not avaricious. That's a word we use every day, of course. Not avaricious. But this qualification is quite similar to what we talked about a few minutes ago with not being greedy of filthy lucre, but it is different. It is different because not being greedy of filthy lucre had more to do with the attitude that was involved with their view of money, their willingness to use base gain and the like in order to acquire it. Whereas this particular passage here, this particular word about not being covetous, has more to do with our attitude toward the element itself. Not being greedy of filthy lucre had the idea of wanting more and more, while here we find the idea of coveting a particular thing, perhaps, that someone else might have. And certainly someone who is covetous cannot serve in the Lord's church as an elder. And again, that is certainly true of all of us. None of us can be guilty of covetousness and be right in God's sight. Again, we saw over in 1 Corinthians 5 that discussed a few minutes ago. And Colossians 3 and in verse 5, we'll notice a couple of these. Colossians 3 and in verse 5, Paul said, "Put to death, therefore, your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry." And so it's to be put away from us. We're not to allow it to remain. And how can we really talk about money and our attitudes about money without thinking about 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verses 6 through 10? 1 Timothy 6 and beginning at verse 6. Paul said, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." That's the opposite of the person that's covetous. "Godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, for neither can we carry anything out. But having food and covering, we shall be therewith content. But they which are minded to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare, and many foolish and hurtful lusts, such as drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, which some reaching after have been led astray from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows." Love of money is the root. It is a root of many kinds of evil. And indeed, we see that a lot in our society today. A man who's guilty of covetousness or is greedy of filthy lucre, as we talked about it earlier, he cannot serve in the Lord's church as an elder. As Hebrews 13 and verse 5 says, "Be ye free from the love of money, content with such things as ye have. For himself hath said, I will in no wise fail thee, neither will I in any wise forsake thee." So we must not be guilty of this either. And so that's where we'll stop in our discussion tonight. As I said, we have more that we want to look at, and we'll do that in a couple of weeks. Next Sunday will be our second Sunday evening singing, so we'll pick this up in 2 weeks from tonight, and perhaps we'll be able to finish our examination of the qualifications at that time. Our purpose is not to look at all of these in depth and consider everything that can possibly be said about them. Our hope is to be able to help you in your studies as we contemplate as a congregation whether we have men here that are qualified to serve us in this way. It's to help you. I've been recording them. I'll continue to do that. And if you miss a lesson and need to get a tape or a CD of a previous one, let me know, and I'll be glad to help you to get that for you so that you can, in your studies, be able to have the benefit of what we've been sharing here. If you're here tonight, you need to respond to our Lord's invitation. We don't want to leave without giving you that opportunity, to give you the chance before we leave here tonight to make things right before God. So if you're here tonight and you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, don't delay. Take advantage of this opportunity that we know we have while we have it. Let your wishes be known while we're standing and while we're singing.